Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, for a very special Thanksgiving Day parade. It's not a parade. Show with words. Word parade. That's what I'm thinking. Where you don't have to give thanks. Thanks has already been given for you.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from my guitar, quiet floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet. Quiet.
What are you screaming about? Go on, Cobb. How do you know? I can't. Give me a gander with that goose. Stand aside, lame brain. I'll carve it. It's haunted. Get him out of there. Touch it. Afraid. It's haunted. That's silly. You trying to do? Stop me. You know. Why did you quit playing Cobb that time? Scared the touch. We forgot the stuffer. Look at that. Yeah, that's it. We forgot the stuffer. Here, some crackers. Get busy.
You know, I...
Oh, never mind.
No wonder you can't carve it. Just take this.
Stuff the goose.
It's haunted, I tell you.
The year is 1969. The Jazz Three Stooges release their album, A Parrot in a Turkey. Shep Jive, it's the history of vaudeville jazz.
You find yourself transported back to elementary school. It's Thanksgiving. You are cast in the Thanksgiving play. You play either a religious extremist fleeing Europe or indigenous people encountering filthy, diseased humans for the first time and feasting with them. And the feast here is a turkey, and within the turkey a parrot, a live parrot, so that the diners are confused as to whether the turkey has become animated, that it is a zombie. And was this done as a gag, or did someone's pet parrot, a tropical beast, find its way inside of this? Well, we know now that the Three Stooges were not at the original Thanksgiving, nor was there turkey. Instead, the feast consisted of all the repulsive foods you can think of, jellied eel and organ meat and just ground up things that you love. I don't even know what it is. They take beloved childhood cartoon figures and grind those up and add Limburger cheese or whatever you find disgusting. That was actually the first meal. And we ignore the political context. Why? Well, for the very reason that the hats that I'm going to reference were designed. See, those buckles were put on those hats to distract people, even blind them with the reflection. Do you remember back in the day when doctors would wear these things on their heads? They were some kind of concave mirror, and with a little eye hole in it, and they'd look through it and reflect all this light, and they could look in your eye from this. I don't even know what it was. It looked like some, you know, like a radar dish made of aluminum foil. And they would look at you with this reflective eye thing, and blind you with it. And that was the belt buckle on these hats, which were really just witches' hats that had the tip cut off. Did you ever look at hippos and think, wow, they have those weird square teeth? No, they've had their fangs cut off into stubs like Hellboy's horns. So that's what we're looking at. Now you think, how did that parrot get in the hollowed out turkey? And as Mo points out, it's the lack of stuffing. When you don't stuff a turkey, it can become haunted, or in this case, you know, what do you call it? Possessed. Possession. You've seen that in the movies. Oh, my goodness. For a while in the 70s, we thought everybody was going to get possessed by throw-up spirits. Children were going to throw up all sorts of soups because of these demonic forces. And the movies were scary, and they would scare me. And I thought, am I going to get possessed? And she'd say, gonna get. My word, something's already in you, demon devil child. And we'd giggle, because I did throw up a lot. But I'm looking back, I'm thinking it could have just been all these stomach things. You know, kids lick anything. And the habit continued with me well into, I'd say, middle school. Well, you say, don't put that in your mouth. But, you know, it's a way of exploring. So how am I going to know it's food or not? And I guess it's not. An adventurous sort, that's the spirit you want, but not going and taking other people's turkeys. Hi, I'm Hardy White. Now, a lot of people, you may have heard of me, probably not, but I'll tell you why you shouldn't have. I am here to deliver you from all sorts of, I think, terrible things holding you back, almost like a prison, I think, and that is an imagined world that you care about, which does not care about you. And there's a lot of them. Just one off the top of my head would be the Star Wars franchise. You can deeply care about it, imagine yourself in it, and then be shocked that it actually doesn't care about you. Well, another Star Wars franchise is your culture. And I know that's hard to say, oh my goodness. My culture doesn't care about me. And let just hear me out, first of all. I do, but I'm not your culture. I'm just a friend. Oh, my goodness. All the plays about all the things that didn't happen that we did in school. I remember that. And they did, you know, I would say where the, I know a lot of this from the Three Stooges. Because you run out of ideas. The Three Stooges did hundreds of shorts. And so you've got to do all sorts of historical things. It's Leprechaun or this. It's funny. They didn't start pretending they were Hitler until after World War II. I'm going to write a paper on it. But you come up with all sorts of inventions like that and stories and make yourself into all sorts of things. And because there's so many episodes. But they're all created and they're all imagined conflicts, aren't they? Oh, who's going to ever ask you to really do the plumbing in a house right before the party? That's poor planning on their part. If you're having a big party for all sorts of fancy folks, and you say, I have a major plumbing problem, I don't remember, or you've got to have the electricity hooked up because I've just gotten a TV, and it's the first of the ever TVs, and I need it hooked up, and the party is in hours, but I'm just waiting now to the last minute to call you. So it's just preposterous. I've gone through all the Three Stooges shorts and pointed out how they couldn't happen. Well, I would like to submit, and I know that submissions take a lot of time to get back to you, to reject you, but I'd like to submit that that also a lot of things that we do in our daily lives are imagined. Oh, my gosh. Like the importance of our work. Especially if we work for a business. If you work for an endeavor and it has a name, and the name, first of all, if the name's a pun, you should move to the woods. Unless it's, I guess not if it's your hair salon. There's so many exceptions. I'm finding as I do more work and I'm reading more, there's just about an exception for everything. and there's a paradox around every corner. Why is that? Well, this is what I believe in my research that I have uncovered. You say, well, there's language paradoxes, even mathematical paradoxes, aren't there? And yes, there are. And why is that? Why do we keep ending up contradicting ourselves when we make observations? Well, you're using your brain to look at your brain, and you're using you to look at you, and you're using soaking in it, as Madge would say. She was a famous metaphysician from the 60s and 70s, I guess. And she was both a expert on dishwashing and a bit of a manicurist. I'm not sure which one she was full-time doing. But she would soak her clients in Palmolive just the way they do oil-saturated waterfowl that has become tar-soaked because of an oil leak or something, because we're drilling for oil because of automobiles.
I said automobiles are a useless nuisance. Never amount to anything but a nuisance, and they had no business to be invented.
Of course, you forget Mr. Morgan makes them. Also did his share in inventing them. If you weren't so thoughtless, he might think you rather offensive.
I'm not sure George is wrong about automobiles. With all their speed forward, they may be a step backward in civilization. Maybe that they won't add to the beauty of the world or the life of men's souls. I'm not sure. But automobiles have come. And almost all outward things are going to be different because of what they bring. They're going to alter war, and they're going to alter peace. And I think men's minds are going to be changed in subtle ways because of automobiles. And it may be that George is right. May be that in 10 or 20 years from now, if we can see the inward change in men by that time, I shouldn't be able to defend the gasoline engine, but would have to agree with George that automobiles had no business to be invented.
Then that solution to a problem that didn't exist created another problem. So we made roads, and we had to get tar for the roads, and then we had to have shops on the roads, and then all these things just accumulate over time. And what are they? They are the detritus of our mistakes, of our cobbled together solutions for imaginary problems. Oh my goodness. And then we seemingly make something exquisite. You go, look at this culture. It looks like a beautifully formed thing. What? Like a coral? A coral's a good analogy because it grows out of what? Its own deadness. That's all that is accumulated dead others. And it just grows over time and branches out. It doesn't mean that it was designed that way or that's an exquisite thing. It just means we're left with all this stuff. It's like almost like that roadside picnic Russian sci-fi book. The stuff that we leave behind ends up being the culture. That's just our garbage. Oh, I love it. So how do we free ourselves? How do we do new plays of Thanksgiving?
I don't know.
I do not know, my friend. I'm just here to say that I wish I was having a celebratory meal with you.
Food, all right.
Great, sir, great.
Try the wine.
Thank you, sir. Cheers. Happy days.
Y'all have asked me to say a few words before Thanksgiving dinner tonight, and I am so honored. And I'm just so pleased that we're all together, first of all, let me say that. Second of all, I'm going to go cut straight to the chase and start talking about the food. There are a lot of vegetarian dishes here tonight. You will see that there are cards on a lot of the dishes. They will describe various ways intestinally that these dishes hit. And what I mean by that is it'll say things like a lot of lactose in this, or, beans that might be a challenge, good luck, high fiber, things you'll need to know for digestion. Because Of course they all taste good. That's half of the battle. Can I get it on through me? In a comfortable way. And that is different. Because I always use the analogy of, like, let's say there's a really flavorful marble or something. If you keep swallowing them, you're going to do damage. I don't even know if you could pass them. And what is that noise? Are you playing Kerplunk? No, I ate those flavored marbles. And you just suck the coating off of them. That's no good. So we rate them on digestion as well. This is a vegetarian dish. It has a lot of, you know, things in it that might be, unless you have a rumen, it might be tough for you to get through it. Other things, of course, there's an ingredient list, but there's also a list of intentions. Like, what was the kind of mood I was in? Because that really has an effect, especially on things like butter. You'll notice when you're making pie crust, people go, oh, the butter has to be as cold as possible. No, you do. You have to have steely nerves in order to make that pie crust flaky. That's counterintuitive because you'd say, well, I should be flaky to have a flaky pie crust. Say, no. No, you can't be flaky or dense. Isn't that fun? I love to cook, though. It's a great way of showing your love, and it's so much better than confessional poetry or things like that. A lot of times, isn't it better? Wouldn't you rather get a wonderful apple pie than a note that says, seriously, where are we in our relationship right now? That's not it. So you can't really go wrong with food. Now, people do have different dietary needs, as I said. And my pets, I'm down to one pet. But that one pet, she gets some kind of kibbled food because I can't make her side dishes all day long, and I would love to, and I don't know what she really eats. I've seen her eat in the wild, and it can't just be poo. So I don't know what, or chipmunk, or whatever she gets on her own. So I don't know what domesticated dogs would get if they were just let to run wild. Just garbage. They'd be so unhealthy. But I want her to have a healthy coat and everything, because I have to live with that coat, because it's all over my furniture. And so we eat, same thing with people. Say, hey, if we're going to live together, I want a bit of a say about what goes in you, food-wise. Everything else, none of my business. But food, maybe it is. How much you drink, that would certainly be my business. But if it's, what if it's knee-high or L81 or but something else, something, birch beer? What if it is? Well, I don't know. I don't really care. Bless you. I'm being silly now, and I know you'd like to get to your food. But hey, a lot of people say, I like Thanksgivings that are almost like a Seder, where you're going like, oh, God, how long is this going to take? We read from a book or something, and we've done that. All you have to do is to get it to be like a Passover Seder, your Thanksgiving meal, is just do some sort of like Andy Kaufman piece beforehand, where you all make everybody read from a book, you know, just pick one. It could be any kind of classic. And you just pass it around. And you go, now it's your turn to read from Moby Dick or whatever. And I think that would be fine. And you say, well, I can smell the brisket and it's killing me. That's part of it. It's an immersive play where we learn that you can't always have, you know, what's it mean to be hungry and desire? How can you crave the brisket that you don't know exists? Now, I know it's a horrible, horrible trick to play on people, but I worked with the great people at Glade to come up with Glade brisket. And we tested it in a couple markets, and it didn't test so hot, to be honest. Because why would I want everything to smoke meat? I don't even eat meat. Well, I don't know. I don't tell you. We had one that also smelled like livestock. Because I was inspired. I went to the agricultural fair, and I was like, you know, there's a attraction repulsion, I feel, with farm animal odor. And it can be, I don't know, it's a combination of scat or what are they called? Scat dung. I don't know. I'm not a farmer, a rancher. But there's something almost appealing about it. Straw. It's straw that's gone through a bit. It's gone through something. Mostly a cow or something, but you know, I mean, it's been distressed. It's been tested, the straw. And so it's got a little something. You know, a lot of times that research has been done on this. Odors that are stinky are sometimes appealing to us. Now, we know it in cheese, you know, that's a bacteria going to work there. It's like a foot bacteria. And my sock smells a lot like some types of cheese. And you go, yes, there's a reason for that, because what you're smelling is bacteria. But also that what they'll do is they'll take fungus and they'll inject it in a certain type of tree. And then you have agar wood, or what gives you the oud fragrance. And it's very coveted and very expensive ingredient, the real stuff. And you get it in such wonderful, remarkable fragrances, such as Oud for Greatness by Initio, which is a lovely. They are a niche house that makes fantastic fragrances, and that's their best. I don't know if you're doing your Christmas shopping ahead of time, if you want any fragrance recommendations. Bless you. I haven't gone through many now. I'll tell you what, it's being, even though I just get the samples, still too broke. I'm thinking about it. I'm going to have to make dried apple figurines or something for Christmas. I know a lot of artist friends are going, I'm glad Christmas is coming around, because I just live off of pickle ornaments or something like that I made. I make them. My fine art I do most of the year, but then, hey, I make some things that the people want. Who are the people? Not real people. I don't know what you want. Oh, my friends, here I am giving the blessing, and I end up just being more self-conscious, drawing awareness to this thing we're doing, getting together and eating. Now, in the TV show that's been on one season, it's going to be on another one, Severance, they had a meal together where they didn't eat any food. And I've had those too. It's usually just the service is so bad. So this is insane. We're never going to eat. And then sometimes you don't, ever. Did you ever have one of those things? You go, where did our server go? Some of that is me. I will go into restaurants and I will seat people and then I'll take their order and then I'll just go home. And I wonder whatever happens to them. And I look online to see if people have told a story or anything like that. And no, I would never do that. Gosh, who'd go around spreading the bad karma like that? Never. Think of karma as just motor oil. You know, it's just, won't go away. You can hide it, but everyone's going to know. Maybe not everyone. They'll know from the stink. That's the thing. Oh, you can always tell from the odor. I've tried hiding things away. I say I'm going to take these things I'm ashamed of, my selfishness or something, and I'm going to put it in a shoebox. And then I think, wow, what died? But it's me. It's a little bit of my heart died. And now it's rotting away. And again, good, bad smell. Weird, right? Strange. Got to tell me what it is first. Is that, you know, gas or biscuits or whatever? Oh, bless all of us, though. Thanksgiving, let me break it down. That's too much. Thanks, or just thank. Thank or thanks? How much should I break it down? Do thank, then do SG as a chance to talk about the Gibson electric guitar. Okay. Then do IV. Okay. Is just a G left? I don't know. I'll get to it. But thank you so much. You're welcome. What is to thank? Is to acknowledge, at least. Did you ever give a wedding present to a person under a certain age? You don't get a thank you note anymore. And that's because things have changed a little bit. My grandmother's day, you might send a gift and then get a thank you note. And maybe even write a thank you note for the thank you note back, saying that was a lovely thank you note. Thank you. Thank you. But, I mean, I gave some gifts recently for weddings, and that's just not done nowadays. Nowadays, they say, hey, that's an old convention of sending these thank you notes. Instead, I'm just going to not acknowledge it at all in any way. Because aren't we in some way entitled to receive gifts? Why do you need to be thanked? You know, why can't you just give? You need to feel special. And I have to think about that for a while. So, yeah, you know, people that need to give charity. So I won't be acknowledged. I'm going to give charity to something. And then you got to name the building after me. And, is that any different than saying, all I want is a thank you? Well, you still want to be acknowledged. It's really hard to do things anonymously to make the world better. Go, yeah, but it's just rude not thanking for a gift. I don't know. Is it or is it just culture? It's hard to say. If you've ever been involved in some kind of potlatch war, competitive gift giving, maybe it's best to just take it and run off. That's the way with animals. Did you ever give something to a crow? And you say, those crows ate those peanuts. And I had read that a lot of times they'll bring you a gift. And I was not gifted anything by the crows. Well, that's just foolish. Now you expect them. What'd you expect? You feed. I gave a chicken to an alligator. And the next day, I was brought the most magnificent sculpture. And I don't know, it was made out of cypress knees or something. And I think the gator had done it. Well, that's probably not going to happen. Bless you. Oh, I don't think I'm saying don't write thank you notes. I don't know what I'm saying. First of all, this is a Thanksgiving prayer and grace. I'm not giving advice. Certainly not advice on manners or etiquette, which is even hard to say. And etiquette. I'm going to think about etiquette for a while because I think there's probably a lot of puns in there. But because I hear the word kit, right? And my brain's doing that. That's the pun. The demon of puns makes that sound because it's getting ready. Did you ever say something and the person, your punning friend goes, because they're ready, here it comes. It's a pre-volcano thing, a little earthquake. And you know it's going to, oh, damn it, they're going to make a pun. Which means that probably the content of what I said was ignored. So I've taught courses, actually, at the local college on how to make sure that your speech has no cannot be misconstrued in any way. And it's a wonderful thing. It's just absolutely, it's non-connotative speech, I call it. And so you, my friend, are a rigid indicator. I say, yes, I am. Listen, I have nothing to offer you but my words. I've visited some places recently and people where people don't know me. And there came a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. To me, the whole world's a Pharaoh, is that Pharaoh. None of them know Joseph. You do. Bless your heart. I love you. Can I come to your house? But I've gone places that they say, they don't know, Hardy, what is it that you do? And when I tell them, it sounds to me, and I try to embellish it, this is even me bragging. It feels underwhelming. That's the way I talk. Well, it's just like talking, like a monologue, yeah, just off the top of your head. I don't know, man, which is better? That's what I usually say. I will tell you what you want to hear. I don't know what's impressive. Yes, and I do it. I end up lying. I do it in several languages. I'm on worldwide. I don't know I don't know who I'm trying to impress or what. But hey, I don't do it for the money. I just do it because, you know, just all I want is you to say thank you. No, that's not true. I'm kidding. No, we're past that, I hope. What do you mean? I feel blessed already. I've already been thanked. People have thanked me for you. If you haven't thanked me, don't worry. I've been thanked. I don't feel deprived. I don't feel, I'm good. You know, now I'm just trying to do no harm or do better or something like that. But as far as confidence, I don't think mostly that has to do with blood sugar. I'm convinced now. As the world comes into, now that I'm getting older and the world comes into focus, I'm surprised by the lack of detail and excited. And I realize that a lot of that detail I've put in, that Most of life for me has been that thing where you see faces and machines and all. You see patterns that aren't there, or you imagine stories. And I don't know if that's a human thing or whether we've just trained one another to do that. But by golly, you can sit there. You can watch a human. Watch a human sitting in a chair, and you say, I'm going to try to figure out what's up. We do this with chimpanzees and everything. So watch a human, and the human is like, maybe it starts to sob, and you go, what is going on? Because a lot of what concerns this human is internal. It seems it's living in some sort of imaginary world that's very important to them, so much so it can have physical manifestations. So if I have a monkey friend in there, I don't know, well, let's say something a little more chill. You'd say self-aware, but I'd say comfortable with themselves. It might just be thinking, I wonder what there is to eat. And that's a better thing to think than, I wonder if people at the radio station like me. That's not real. That wasn't my voice. Bless you. Some do, some don't is my answer, so I'm okay. I don't know which ones, but I don't need to know. I feel like all I need to know is percentages, and I'm pretty sure it's a percent. I bet it's double digits. A double digit percentage of the people at the radio station like me, Hardy White. Could be. I doubt it. I'll tell you why I don't think it's single digits. Because of hope. Oh, I love you. I love to be loved, but I don't demand it. I feel like if you just, if you do think about things like, I wonder what there is to eat, others with you will respond. I think that is a good thing to think. And other than your paranoid thoughts that involve me in some kind of imagined drama, I like the part where you start talking about cheese sandwiches or something like that. That makes more sense. And now that human alone in a room, its emotions correspond to its experience. But what about memories? I figure when you listen to this show, a lot of the memories will fly away. They will scatter like cockroaches in the kitchen light of my madness. I'm trying to introduce a level of chaos that will undo the storylines, make you forget about the soap operas that you've internalized, about the fictional characters and their possible real counterparts that inhabit your world. So, Zombo is not Louis Nye. That's a terribly dated. I've got to think of something better. What's a character who is not the person? Madeira? No, who's this like a, I don't know. Shrek isn't Mike Myers. I'm confused now. But all of us have a fictional counterpart. And that identity has nothing to do with us. And that lives in other people's plays. So there's a character based on you that lives in the internal theater of all who have met you and interacted with you. And then there's you. That's in your play. Sometimes you are treated no better as an actor or a character than by others. Oh, my goodness. So make yourself the director and the main. Be your Orson Welles to yourself. And then others will make you into a character anyway. I think the real Orson Welles understood this. He's like, I know who Orson Welles is, and I know who you think Orson Welles is, and I know who the third thing that people who don't know me think is. What? Is that what he said? No. I don't know what he said. Again, making things up. It's all made up. It's all fantasy. Every time we open our mouths and use words, these self-reflective weird things, these contradictory things, these paradox-laden infobombs, this happens. Because, and science will tell you this, they say we're not answering questions, really. We're making more questions. To which I say, Oh, for God's sakes, then stop. We have enough questions. If indeed this kind of inquiry is creating more questions, not more answers, then we have a problem. And you are just, it's like tribbles or guppies or something. We have enough. Stop. Maybe there should be just some central questions that linger. And if pursuing them just makes them split into a thousand more, don't shoot it. We're full of movies like that that say, oh, that's, you're making it, if you cut off a head, it grows more heads. More heads like Agnes? No, it doesn't grow. Could. So I'm offering no questions and arbitrary answers, because language, truth, and math are local, and they have to do with where and when you are, their accuracy. They change, believe me. It has to do with the lens that you're looking through, and your lens is you. Oh, you are in a crazy, mixed-up world. How am I supposed to? Who am I? Who are you? You went to school, yes, and you had some college. I did. And you were hoping to be, you had some ideas, but then, you know, just stuff happens. You get jobs, you postpone things, you talk yourself out of stuff, and then you're doing all right, and you're self-sufficient, but you're craving some sort of identity. Yeah, because that's been drilled into you by the things that you enjoy, all the arts and fiction that you consume is telling you that you're one of those roles and you can't figure out which one it is. I've seen the television, and I'm sure that I'm one of the Beatles, but I don't know which one. And a lot of young people thought that when I was coming up, say, I know that I'm in a band. I know I'm supposed to be a pop star. Who put that idea in your mind? Because it wasn't there when we were living on that wonderful desert island. But speaking of desert islands, whether you want to admit it or not, or you think I'm just kidding, if you put a child in front of Gilligan's Island, what you were showing them ends up being a group of archetypes from which they feel a need to choose someone they identify with, which is how children watch fiction. If you give them Gilligan's Island, and I'm now in tears, I'm not, but if you, the child's going to identify with one of them, which one do you think they're going to identify with? It doesn't matter which one you say. It's not good. And that could happen with the Brady Bunch, where it's subtler. She's like me. She hates her sister and wants to kill her in her sleep. She's like me. Jan's like me or whatever. And that could be. But that's all imagination. And what you're not, those words coming out of Jan's mouth. That's Sherwood Schwartz, not a little girl. It's all messed up. I hope that my words affect you. How? Oh, positively. I say, Hardy says I'm somebody. Hardy says that these constructs are what's holding me, what's alienating me from myself. This idea that to matter, or to be at home in the world, I need to fit into one of these storylines that I'm bombarded with. That these plays, these Thanksgiving plays, that one of those roles is me. And the reality is, none of them are. You're none of them. What am I? Them. I'm sorry. You are them, but you're not them. There's no really breaking free completely. Again, there's recognizing you're in the Truman Show and then forgetting it again. And that's what hopefully we're going to do, is we're going to realize that we're in a play, go, oh my God, I'm in a play, rearrange it, fix things, and then go back to thinking we're in a play. How's that? Is that all right? That's it in a nutshell. That's what I wish to do. I wish to say, you're living in a big manipulation. Oh, Lord, it's fine. Let's just take it over, reorganize it, and go back in, and it'll be better. Right? Your life is the holodeck. It's been programmed incorrectly. Go out, redo it, go back in. That's all. That's all it is. Just understanding that maybe you do live in a confined reality. But what are we going to put in it? First of all, parrots inside of turkeys. Now, something I've always wondered, and I think I know the answer to, is none of these actual turkeys in any of these Three Stooges are real. Maybe the raw ones are, but after that, the cooked-looking ones look like papier-mâché. I doubt they were plastic back then. It was probably something a little more practical. Who knows, though? Maybe they had maybe plastic turkeys were just available for things. But it feels like during the war, they'd say, you know, no more fake food. We need it for the war effort. Why? Well, using food plastics that normally we would make fake foods with to create the seams on airplanes that we are using to battle Hitler's forces in Europe. Therefore, we have no plastic bananas. They're holding in the windshields of whatever our version of the Messerschmitt is. What is it? The plane, not the other. Why do I only know the planes of our enemies? I don't know. I don't know either. I perhaps am a spy. That's my sound effect to make it sound like old-timey radio. I'm the best at it. Oh, my goodness, you're not, Harley White. I'd love if I could just have one broadcaster. I'm all like, I do that fully yourself thing. I think I could do it. People don't like you to be super confident. If you have to do it, you got to be so overconfident, and then you can't ever go back again to being modest or fake modest. But I would love to just to do some that kind of bombast bragging. I'm the best at radio there is. And I don't mind doing it ironically. And you can always signal that, you know, you could say, I'm the best at radio, like that. And say, well, that wasn't very good. I go, no, see how I'm... my self-awareness. But then maybe people wouldn't pick up on that, and they would just think I was arrogant and bragging and lack self-awareness, because clearly I'm not the best at radio. Who is, though? What's that even mean? Best? There is no best. Again, it's local. It's best at the moment for a certain person. Because I have, I'll tell you that, that's why I'm thankful, and that's why I don't need any thanks anymore, because in my 90% silliness, 10% of the time, I've come to this understanding about somebody that might be listening and how difficult life is and where their heart may be and how all-consuming and life-ruining grief is, or pain. And all of a sudden, that realization sweeps over me. And the next question I ask is, how can I help? But then it's pretty obvious I can't help, because I don't even know who it is, and I am but a disembodied voice. But what if that disembodied voice at least acknowledged it? You know, it's like on the romper room when that lady used to say a name, and maybe it'd be your name, but maybe she's not referring to you, but it doesn't matter, because the set of broken hearts, you're in that set. The set of all broken hearts includes you. And so should I say that, you understand who I am speaking to. And you say, somebody saw me. Well, that's an expression, I feel seen. It means you acknowledge. They've listed things that hurt, and they named the thing that's hurting me. And sometimes that's very important to know that other humans know that. The next thought can be like, well, if they know, why aren't they doing something to stop it? That's
another show. So the first would be to open the eyes, to understand what's going on. Open your eyes so wide that you see the edges of the stage. Oh my God, it's a play. I can now see the edge of the stage. I can see where if you go too far, you might fall off the end into the audience. And even though the house lights are down, I can see the audience, or I can sense them, or I can hear your grandfather going, I can't hear anything. I can't hear anything. So I know they're out there. And now I realize that we can say any lines we want. We can adjust things. It doesn't have to be this people with buckles on their hats and everything. You can rewrite it. If it's wrong, if it's a lie to begin with, and come up with a better one. A lie that establishes a better play. I don't know what we're all going to dress up in. So let's say we're rewriting the play called First Thanksgiving. You and I. And we're doing it here in this apartment, at this house, at this dinner. All of us right now. This is the First Thanksgiving. Just like the Passover Seder or something. Make it a chance to talk about something. Sit at your table tonight and talk about stuff, not contentiously. But I don't know. I'm not going to suggest conversation topics. But do that. Tell stories, but ones that you want to be part of. And mythologize the wonderful moments of joy so that you'll have a recipe for them in the future. That's what I've done a lot of times in my life. If I want to pass on some wisdom with how to achieve joy to young people, I might take something, some event in my life, sort of mythologize it, make it into a story that makes people's hearts better or more compassionate, then pass it on and say, you ought to do this. This is the road trip that made us love humanity more. And you give them a myth to recreate. That's what I say. Not some kind of stifling myth to embed authoritarianism in your the consciousness of your congregation or something, or whoever you want to influence. Influence is fine. Let's influence them to be a joyous heart. Oh, bring it. Come on. Suffer the little fools or something. I don't read much. I read a little bit. And my goodness, what are you reading into this, Hardy? I'm reading out thunder. I'm reading out. I'm reading out love between all of my siblings. Ooh, tell me your name. Tell me who you are. When I have a party and I have people over, I say, tell me who you are. Tell me your name. Tell me who you are. At no point do I say, okay, few rules. Let me tell you who you are. My God, who would party with that person? Who would want to be in their home? Who'd want to be their neighbor? So I'm not like that. But I know lots of people who are. Hey, who are you? Wait, let me tell you who you are. Hang on now. I come with many stories. I am a walking elementary school with a play that we do every year, and you don't know it, and you're not in it.
Well, you look familiar.
We all look familiar to one another. I've been in a couple different cities and different places lately, and the whole doppelganger thing is just terrifying to me. And I realize there's just so many people, and I'm seeing the repeats. It's freaking me out a little bit. It's to see the limitations of this, whatever it is. I thought there, because before I wasn't paying as much attention to things. Now that I'm looking at those things, I go, uh-oh, those are the same folks from home. I mean, they're different. They don't know who I am here, but just a slight variation. Their eyes, that's just Joey, but his eyes are closer. Does that happen to you? I mean, man, that is just, it freaks me out. And people have done, there was even a Simpsons where they go to the next town and everybody's like slightly different variations. I think they did that on the Seinfeld Simpsons. Simpfeld, or whatever that show was, where there's a bizarro world, you know, we know that notion. And I think that's something that we sense, is that perhaps I'm not unique. Somebody's been playing this role for a long time, and now it's me to come in there. Maybe that was that take the burden off? Anything that helps you, takes the pressure off. That's what I'm for you, my friend. I want you to be gentler with yourself. You say, well, a lot of people are too gentle with themselves. Well, bless you for being that judge. I wouldn't want to be. Tell me about your courtroom, judge. I want to know these people that are having to come before you, and then you can say how good they or bad they can be to themselves. And I never would put that myself in that position. The arrogance of some. Go around telling people who they are and what they can be and everything like that. That's crazy to me. When did that... this is freedom hating. A lot of freedom hating. In the name of freedom, of course. The contradictions abound, don't they? Oh, I love... How many docs do you have? I got a pair of docs. What are you going to do with them? Pull up my boat, pull up my boat. Boo, there's two of them. I see what you did. There is two because it's a mirror. It's all recursion. I see you. Ooh, I see myself. I'm reflected in the light that is coming from without. And I see you, my friend, at the table here of joy. And we spread our food. Green bean casserole. Did you know that the Campbell Soup Company was originally started just for casseroles? And somebody thought, sometimes I just water down that casserole goop and make soup out of it. And they went, hey, that's why there's no, that's when you empty it out of the can and go, this can't be right, because it isn't soup yet. Because you have to add, it's not even dehydrated, it's just a couple notches of moisture away where it needs to be. It's just clearly it's congealed. But I think it's congelity is or congenality. I don't know what the word is. Let's make one up. Congelatinousness has to do with its original intent. We were all supposed to be thicker, is what I'm saying. And I'm thick. I'm the original kind of thick, like a Neanderthal. Because really you get, I think, mostly you're, the head was originally used to bump things down, to knock over trees and knock coconuts out of trees and stuff. Only later did it become used for thinking. And that's where I think we went wrong. And we just, you're better off just bashing your head into a coconut tree than trying to come up with philosophy, which is a word game and is going to give you a bigger headache. I hope that's the end of the show, but I don't think it is.
Instead of the cold, hard facts, the expression should be the cold, hard butter, because it's always much colder and harder. I'm not taking the bait. I guess it's because language evolves. Like the expression spit and image was originally spit and homage, indicating that physically, spit, and conceptually, homage, the two things are identical. I'm swimming away now. Is it plus side or plus size? I've heard both used. For different things, they're used for different situations. No one ever confuses the two. Oh, so I made a mistake, but on the plus size, it was a teaching moment. Why don't I learn? I'm going to go lie down in the cistern and pray for rain. You're making a lot of fish out of water references. I never got that expression. I could see how a fish could be out of fish food.
Good morning, friends. Why is Butchie stabbing you with a fork?
It might be something I said. Come on, Butch. Stop sticking a fork in me. I'm done.
For my meal envelope selection, I chose the vegetarian
Butch,
option,
hit skip
which
ad.
Was the salsa.
I can't. I'm doing something. You hit skip ad.
Butter sliced walnut.
I can't.
And corn beans.
I'm doing something.
Oat stew, beet potatoes.
Hardy. Could you hit skip
slice.
Ad?
What?
The
ingredients
hit
were surprisingly
ad.
Fresh. And
oh,
it
okay.
Was, really.
Thank you.
Thank you. No problem. I feel like you have left us sitting here at the dinner table, salivating over our empty plates, so much so that they now contain a little lake of spittle, and on which, out of boredom, is sailing a little boat that I've made out of pieces of the napkin. And I apologize, it's a cloth napkin, but I gnawed through a little part to make the what I needed to make the boat. Please stop your prayer, you're saying. Listen, there can be too much gratitude, I say. Let's move on. To gratitude, it's also in the word ingratiating. And also, what's another word? Grating. Say, oh my gosh, I'm grateful for that cheese. Means, you know, I'm going to grind it all up and then eat it. And then, depending on its age and where it came from, get crampy, maybe. It's hard to tell. If you are lactose intolerant, there's goat cheese. There's ewe cheese. For instance, Roquefort or any of those like that. You can eat the milk of sheep. And that's just like the Cadillac minivans. Today, it's not my brain that's giving me the problem, really. It's my hand, which has become sentient. It's got its own mind in it now. I think it's possessed by some sort of demon. And there's a little face in it. And it's going like, get the hamburger helper. And I go, I don't want hamburger helper. Why is there a face in my hand? I say, oh, I'm a yokai. Your hand is so old, it came alive. And that has happened to people I've known. And I don't want it to happen to you. I raise up my hand now in a sort of benediction and praise. I am blessing.
I am Hardy's hand, and I can...
Don't. It doesn't need to talk. How about it does the Senior Wences thing, where my thumb knuckle is the lower lip. I don't need to do that either. I'm going to open my palm and as a way, if it's a symbol... In the old days, people could shoot lasers out of it, and that's what they would do is they would pray. They would lift their hands up to heaven and shoot a laser, and that would God would go, whoop, I see you later. I gotta go. Got a laser signal to answer. And then later, people put their hands together and prayed like that, where the laser is just shooting into their other hand. God doesn't hear those prayers. So open them up. Either do the open up palm thing or press them up to heaven. And that will act like an antennae. If you put them together, again, it's just feedback, which is fine, too, because prayer is largely speaking to yourself and reminding yourself to do things. So if I pray and I say, if I pray, and I don't always say pray because it reminds me of the other word, the homonym. I say, oh, gosh, you know, it's not just a given that this food is here for us. And my gosh, these relationships that we develop and love, we feel for one another is a product of a lot of good decisions. And recognizing that and acknowledging it constantly. If it takes this prayer thing or this play or anything, whatever it takes, whatever ritual it takes to remind myself to stay in whatever state I'm in, which is one of openness, of joy, and wanting to share it with you. And feeling like all of us together feel more powerful and secure than my lonely, hungry self. That we can only feed one another, that there is a food that we require, that we can only give to one another, have from one another. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, and that's what it is, Miracle Nutrition, with Hardy White, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org, worldwide. Oh, freeform radio the way you thought, and mahogany. Thank you.
You're listening to Mahogany on WFMU. I'm Dave the Spaz. I'm filling in for Bailey this week. Here's Rahsaan Roland Kirk.
Now, a whole lot of things been bothering me. Because a lot of people think that things is cool. People ride around in those cars and riding them airplanes. Pocket full of money and everybody thinks that things is cool. Even the old jive president accident, would make you think that things is cool. But I'm here to tell all y'all and him too, that we got a cross that we must bear. And the cross gets awful heavy. Now there's the black cross, the green cross, the white cross, the double cross, the crisscross, and the lost cross. and the cross gets awful heavy. Different times, but one is supposed to keep on going on and carrying the cross on his shoulder. Because you ain't supposed to let no cross cross you up. You're supposed to let a cross help you get across. And if you let a cross help you get across, you won't get crossed up, but you'll be on the cross because you done got a cross on the cross. So if you can remember this, you won't get lost on the cross while you're trying to get across. So we just here to let you know about it. I know that you knew already, because y'all the hippest people in the world. Hip, black, and white. But you still know that you got a cross you must deal with. So when it crosses you up, go on and deal with it and leave it alone.